Today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by SeatGeek, the smartest way to find hockey tickets this season. As you know, there is absolutely nothing better than being behind the glass or in the cheap seats or somewhere in the arena to watch an NHL game. How do we know this? Have you ever tried watching hockey on television? Come on, we all know this. It's better to be there live. And it's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats you want for a great value thanks to SeatGeek. I've got the app on my phone. I use it to buy hockey tickets. I use it to buy concert tickets. I've used it to buy baseball tickets. I use it to buy all kinds of tickets because you always get the best deal on every ticket because SeatGeek price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. The prices can vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek will always find you the lowest available price. Plus, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed with their 100% guarantee. So you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. And here's the best part. You get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase by being a Puck Soup listener. Download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, enter the promo code S-O-U-P, that spells soup, and SeatGeek will send you $20 back after you've made your first purchase. Again, you need the app on your phone. You need to go to that settings tab. You need to click add a promo code. The promo code that you require is S-O-U-P. Soup, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you made your first ticket purchase. Download the app today, get the promo code SOUP, $20 back, and enjoy the show.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo's Puck Daddy blog and JackReacherFan.com.
I'm Dave Lozo, and I can't believe Greg hasn't seen John Wick 2 or John Wick 1 yet.
And you're in Puck Soup.
I'm embarrassed to know you.
Why? I believe that the world is split up thusly.
It's not.
You're either Team Jack Reacher.
Nobody's on that team.
Or Team John Wick. Look at me. Don't light the wick.
That's like saying the world's divided into two things. Team Awesome and Team Movie. Actually, that's not true. Jack Reacher made like $250 million.
Jack Reacher.
But I don't know anyone who saw it. There's never once seen a tweet. They were like, just got out of Jack Reacher. Tom Cruise killed it. No one saw
Jack Reacher 2, but everybody's... Okay. A good portion of people saw Jack Reacher 1. And then it's also been... I feel like it's been on one of the cable stations like FX or something like that. And one of those deals... FX does this all the time where they play a movie and then they play it right afterwards. So I feel like I saw the second half of Jack Reacher, and then I went back and watched the first half. But like Jack Reacher, say what you will about Jack Reacher had Werner Herzog as a villain. Can John Wick boast such grandeur?
The villains aren't really named people. But backing up for a second, you bring up the fact that that movie's on FX all the time.
Yeah.
Explain to me the FX thing where two failed comedic actors or comedians try to sell you a fucking DVD and they stretch out a two-hour movie into 3.5 hours of shit I don't want to see.
You were talking about DVD on TV.
It's the worst.
I get so excited. I get so excited when a movie like Spider-Man 3 is on FX because I know that during each commercial break, Dave Holmes and some lady.
Who's Dave? You I don't even know their name.
Dave Holmes was the
guy.
Come on. We're around the same age. Not really, but almost.
Yes, we are.
Sure. We're around the same age.
We're both 26.
Do you remember when that smelly, skinny guy won the VJ contest?
What?
On MTV? Jesse something. Remember there was that? They had a VJ contest and the smelly, skinny guy who wore like girls' jeans before everybody started wearing girls' jeans.
He was like 6'5", 130 pounds.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, that guy. Okay. He won. And then Dave Holmes.
Oh, my God. You're going to tell me this guy came in second.
Well, I
should know who he is. I should know who he is because of this.
You do. Yeah, he came in second.
I can't tell you who came in second on American Idol 4 years ago.
He came in second. So he was like, hey, what's up, man? It was like, picture like a Kurt Loder type, and then he lost to fucking Russell Brand.
Okay, let's say he is that guy.
Yeah.
So I don't want him to tell me what's on the fucking Thor Dark World DVD every time they come back from commercial. Did you know that Thor had to work really hard to get into character in order to play with Loki's? Like, just put the movie back on. I'm not buying the DVD.
Coming up, we'll show you how they made Topher Grace's teeth so scary as Venom. It's the best.
It's like, and like, you always forget too. Like, you're going through the channels, you just want something mindless on in the background while you're writing, and you're like, oh, the Avengers. The Avengers are on from 2 until 6:30. That movie wasn't that long.
Whoa,
it's the DVD thing. No,
it's the extended cut. You're like, wow, this must. It's the one where they fight the Fantastic Four. It's like, oh my, it's all the scenes they delete. Oh no, it's just it's a guy telling us how they filmed the shawarma scene after the movie was locked.
What's the name of the guy who plays Agent Smith from The Matrix? What's that guy's name again?
Hugo Weaving. Yeah.
Did you know that Hugo Weaving had to sit in a makeup chair for 3 hours every day to get into the Red Skull makeup? Right. I just felt like it really showed off my face and my emotions. I didn't really have to do anything underneath the makeup. That's right. The makeup team of Johnson, Balls, and Face put the makeup on him every morning. And now, back to the movie. Like, just fucking go to the movie!
Well, the concept of it's not that bad, except it's like, okay, the idea is, like, you didn't buy the DVD, but we're going to bring you the DVD extras in the show. The problem is that they pick all the DVD extras that you'd skip. Like, if it was...
that has to be every single extra. It's a two-hour movie stretched to, like, 3.5 hours every time.
You know, they're like, if you have the Avengers DVD, you're like, let's see, History of Iron Man, every issue of the Avengers ever, exclusive interview with Stan... Oh, wait. Yeah, that's the one that makes the air. True believers, I conceived the Avengers as a bunch of teenagers with strange and mysterious powers, but the problems of normal everyday teenagers excelsior.
And I said that the only way I would do these movies is if I could make more awkward cameos than M. Night Shyamalan and his.
And I said to the National Hockey League, I said, look, what you need are 30 superheroes. Oh, God. To each team, the Maple Leaf will throw a sap bomb.
I need at some point before I die. I'm 39 years old. I'm probably halfway to death at best. I need to read like a 4,000 word account of how that was pitched. Who said yes?
Well,
the people in the room that were like, "No, this is going to be stupid. We shouldn't do this."
There was a story about the Guardians project and how it lost unconscionable amount of money.
There's no way it could have ever made money.
But I know what you mean. Like, maybe that's on us. Maybe we need to find for this podcast, and we're going to put the bat signal up here on Puck Soup because
right.
we actually have a listenership.
Are these mics on?
Yeah. If you are someone who either knows someone or wants to help tell the story of... Actually, I'll give you two things. If you know anything about the Guardian Project and how it happened and how it went down and why it was terrible, come on the show. Also, if you were involved in the creation of Thermablades, the skates.
What are those?
Remember the skates that had warm blades that were supposed to make you skate faster because the blades were warm?
That makes no sense.
Yeah. Well, that was a thing that existed. If you helped make those, come on the show too. We want to talk. We've had so many good guests on this show that I feel like we need to have some stories of sadness and disappointment as opposed to the uplift we usually give you from people like Dan Pashman.
If we got somebody who was like either on the creation team or the NHL side, I could talk to that person for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Just endless. I would not run out of questions.
Oh.
Be like, well, we got to go. No, we don't have to go. What the fuck is a sticky bomb? Who thought of that? That's Stan? Did Stan? Because like, I'm picturing like all the George Lucas stuff and how he fucked up all the Star Wars prequels.
Yeah.
I want to have like Stan Lee stories where he comes into the room and he's just like, all right, here's the idea. And it's just the worst goddamn idea ever. And they're just like,
it's
well,
going
we're
to be
it.
30 different superheroes. And they're going to fight a bad guy named Devin Dark. What does Devin Dark do? He's got glowing red eyes, so you know he's a villain. And so then they all, there's a child, he's trapped
under the ice.
Right, but there's a child, and then they all are helping him, but Devin Dark wants to get him too. Why does Devin Dark want to get him? Because he is.
It's based on Gary Bettman, and he wants to destroy hockey.
and all the superheroes are going to prevent that from happening.
How did they settle on Devin Dark? You think they were like bandying about names like Barry Black? No, that's a little too racist. I don't think we should do that.
Evil Knievel. No, that actually is copyrighted and trademarked.
Man, Nightshade. No, we can't. Stan, that's we can't do that, Stan. That's not going to
fly.
Hey,
did you just say Nightshave? Because that reminds me. Props to new sponsor of Puck Soup Podcast.
Segue.
That's right. It's your old pals. It's Harry's. Let me tell you something right now about Harry's. I tried it.
As did I.
What do you think?
Smooth.
I got to tell you something right now about shaving. I have a very odd shaped head. It's very large, like a picture of Bob's Big Boy statue, except rounder and more porcelain.
I don't see any issues with your facial area. Where
I appreciate
have,
that.
Have razor issues?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't have razor issues because they use the Harry's, and it gets in nooks and crannies. And as a man with a round face, I appreciate that.
Nooks and crannies.
The shaving cream that Harry's gives you was very nice and smooth and smelled of beautiful things.
The gel smells like cool water a little
yep.
bit.
And
smell.
And the balm that I need, because I have, again, very fair Irish skin, made my face feel good. And the razors are baller, too. Like, it feels like you're shaving your face and cutting your whiskers down with like 75 blades.
You know what we should do is next week we'll do a little taste test.
We'll put the razors on our tongues?
No, we'll shave one side of your face with like a store brand razor and the other side with Harry's, and then we'll bring in Chris to touch your face and see if he can tell the difference.
Which side is bleeding profusely? That's brand X. Here's the thing about Harry's. We love using it for shaving. And it gives you everything you need for a close, comfortable shave, all for just $2 a blade compared to the $4 or more you'll pay at the drugstore. 5 German-engineered blades, sir.
Germany's where they engineer the blades. You don't want any of these Scottish fucking blades.
No, not
German
at all.
Blades.
Oh, my God. Lubricating strip, flex hinge for a comfortable glide, trimmer blade for hard-to-reach places. I don't know about you, but right around my nose. That's where Harry's helped me a little bit.
For me, it's like right where like the ball sack gets back inside to where the taint is.
Okay.
You gotta kind of
yes.
Oh wait, you were talking about shaving mm-hmm. your face earlier.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not how I used it.
Right. Yes. Harry's is so confident in the quality of their blades, they want you to try their most popular trial set for free. When you sign up, you just pay a small shipping fee. It comes with a razor handle of your choice, a 5-blade cartridge, and shaving gel. And here's the best part: if you're a Puck Soup listener,
what is it?
You can go get you some Harry's right now. For the free trial offer, go to harrys.com, harrys.com/soup, and get your free trial offer. Again, you just pay a small shipping fee. They give you a box. It's got razors and stuff in it. You feel very special. That's harrys.com/soup. And again, support the podcast. Go get you a razor.
It's good for any body part. That's all I'm trying to say.
And if you don't have a big old hairy face, get it for someone that you love and say, here, shave yourself. Wookie,
go to town on your chest.
Yeah, go shave a letter. Can we talk about that for a second? So I saw the other night that you were. I think you tweeted an alert that the face painting episode of Seinfeld was on.
Correct. Gotta support the team.
I've always had a problem with this episode.
Yeah, I noticed that you're unhappy with the unrealistic nature of David Putty's hairy chest.
Yeah, it's correct. Now, painting your face made sense to me, but I never understood anyone who's going to paint their chest for a sporting event. Is not going to have the dark forest of chest hair.
That's true.
That Patrick Warburton has in that episode. You couldn't even listen. He was so hairy you couldn't see the D. I know how that sounds, but I'm talking about the chest painting episode.
Oh. So I was going to say Harry's will take care of that for you as well. I'm telling you, it's the razor. The razor itself is the angles you can get on it are fantastic. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
But like most chess painters, I feel like are like 19-year-old college kids in the student section of like a basketball game. You know what I mean? Like no one has anything going on there at that point. David Putty was like a 45-year-old man.
Yeah.
First of all, nobody paints their chest at hockey games too. Was Seinfeld a good show? Maybe it wasn't.
No, it was a great show. And I always appreciated that episode as, again, being an example of hockey showing up in places where you get excited to see hockey in that place. You know, hockey where you don't expect it.
A Martin Brodeur jersey in 1995 on TV when, like...
Yeah, exactly. On Seinfeld, no less.
Right, like the most popular television
The most popular New York-based show.
Right.
You know, you're like, wow. I didn't even know. They hardly even reference that jersey exists as a territory.
Right.
You know.
Like on 30 Rock, what do they bring in? The guy was a John Tavares guy, right?
He was an Islander fan,
an Islander guy. Like, that was the best part of Seinfeld, was they always had the most random, like, references, like Pepper Johnson.
Yep.
When they were, because, like, who does he look like? Sugar Ray Leonard. No, not, he was like, not Salt, but Pepper Johnson.
Pepper Johnson.
Like, who would go to, like, no one watching that outside of New York probably even got that joke.
Exactly.
Good show.
Great show. Speaking of great shows, the show in Montreal continues, sir, where...
God, I love it.
Michel Therrien is... Au revoir, Michel.
Bonne chance.
Bonne chance, Claude.
Claude.
Hey, and you called it too, right?
Well, I, on this show, I said...
Mm-hmm. Hold on.
What?
Hold on.
Oh, dude.
I don't think... If it's Montreal, it would be interesting because that'd be a return engagement. I don't think it's going to be Montreal.
Now, but,
and yet there he is on Twitter when it happens, bragging about how he called it.
On the other show I do, I called it.
See, here's the thing. You can't... I understand you don't want to have overlapping content on two podcasts. I feel that pain for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't be hedging your calls. It makes us all look
but
bad.
But here's the thing. I ain't hedging anything. I had a bunch of people come at me and be like, oh, you didn't see this coming? It was obvious. I'm like, oh, yeah, it was totally obvious that the guy who hadn't been fired for abject negligence and middling results for the last three seasons get fired.
There's no Claude.
And then the guy who was just fired last week and already coached in this town once would obviously
this town
get hired.
Is
and it's
a
funny.
French town.
Exactly. And like it never ends the whole you know people always say it's overblown. Oh, it is overblown about the
you
French language.
You do not need to have a person who speaks French. It is not a big deal.
I listened to two press conferences today with Marc Bergevin and with Claude Julien, and I would say if there was about a 90 minutes of interview time, I would say roughly 88 of them were in French.
It's because you have to speak French.
You have to.
You have no choice.
Yeah.
That's part of the deal. Like if, like when his 5 years run up, guess who's going to be the new coach? Alain Vigneault. His time will have run out in New York, and he's going to go coach in Montreal. That's just how it's going to be.
I imagine this is this is obviously a goal of his, Claude, to get back to Montreal. He probably felt like he was too young, you know, when he was a spry 42 year old. He probably
hair flowing in the breeze.
Yeah,
as he walked down St. Catharines. The fans reaching out to touch his hair, and he just said, no, I must coach the team. I cannot stay here and talk to you. And he doesn't talk like that.
But I was so young and so ignorant. I spent all of my days at Club Super 6.
Hey, ladies, you want to play the trap with Claude, huh? I don't know what that means, but it sounds good. Huh?
I did not concentrate on my studies.
Oh, no.
I spent all my days at Club Super Sex. Did I ever tell the Club Super Sex story on the show?
I think I've told my Club Super Sex story on the show.
I don't know if I have or not. I might have told it on the old show, but I'll just briefly. I was having a cigar outside of the Bell Center. I was up there with a bunch of people for draft or All-Star Weekend or something. And I was having a cigar with my buddy, and all of a sudden our friends had gone to Club Super Sex, and they walked back. And meet us there. And we're like, hey, so how did it go? And like, wow, there was quite a scene there. And then we're like, what? And they were telling me a story about how there was a girl who, like, it was a stripper, and she was asking for volunteers on the stage to come on stage. And she, you know, pulled up this girl from the audience and, like... basically, like, disrobed her and threw her down and, like, savaged her on stage.
Sounds okay if you're into that sort of thing, I guess.
And everybody was cheering. And then, like, one of my friends was like, this seems so bizarre. Like, as an American who's not used to the French-Canadian sex club scene, I need to find out what this is. So my friend went over to her. To the girl that was on stage,
the civilian,
yeah. And he's like, "Hey, boy, that was something. What was that?" She goes, "Dude, I'm 17 years old, drunk as fuck, and I just had my asshole eaten by a stripper." And I'm like, oh, so that's how Club Super Sex went. They're like, yeah, that's how Club Super Sex went.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me, like, she was, like, a stripper there, and she was just there, like, on her off day, and she just went up there for fun. I didn't think you were going to tell me she was
drunken
17-year-old.
It's not like a David Copperfield show, okay? She's not, like, an audience plant.
Is there anyone in the audience who would like their asshole eaten? Yes, you, ma'am. Wait, doesn't she work here?
Now, we've never met before, myself and your asshole, right?
I've never seen your asshole, correct?
I saw Copperfield in Vegas, by the way, this past weekend.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Walking around the streets?
No. We paid to watch the show.
He made your money disappear?
He made our money disappear. I gotta say, it's still pretty amazing the shit he does as far as, like, making himself, like, disappear right in front of your eyes and stuff. But there's definitely kind of... remember when he was on TV and it was very sort of rock star, sort of like leather pants and flowing shirts and shit? Now it's very much like frustrated old Jewish uncle is just up there being like, you know, when I was a kid, my dad always told me to follow my dreams and do magic. Here's some magic. That's kind of the level of energy for the show right now. But it's not to say that we didn't have a great time. It was a really fun time.
My super sex story is Will Cordero and a couple of the Expos were there. It was the last year Montreal was in town, and they were just hanging out. Like, nothing crazy happened with the guys that were there. I want to say Brad Fulmer was also in the place at the same time, and we saw some stuff. Nothing quite as graphic as a audience participant analingus scene, but it was still a pretty good couple hours there.
It was Allison Williams from Girls. I don't know. I buried the lead.
Jesus.
So Claude's back.
So Claude.
And...
I love it. I love that move. It's such a fucking alpha dog move. Just like, you know what? Michelle's my guy. I love Michelle. He's our coach.
We are in a foxhole together.
We are in the foxhole. We are going to... Oh, what is that? Claude is available?
On Valentine's Michelle. Day, no less. That was the great part about it. He got back with his ex on Valentine's Day.
Hey, sometimes you have to... Yeah, the heart wants what the heart wants. And the heart wants a coach that can get me over the top and... Get me out of the first round. And that's Claude.
But you know what's funny, though? Like, it seems like the signs are pointing to that he was going to fire Therrien no matter what, because they allegedly reached out to the Panthers about Gallant's availability, which I imagine the conversation would have gone like this.
So, speak French?
Not really. Okay.
Good luck in Vegas.
What is the French word for taxi cab? Le taxi cab? Do not know. Hold on.
Parlez-vous Uber?
But I could give you a lift if you assign me.
But I agree with you. Like, I feel like it's ballsy in the sense that, like, he had Mark Bergevin had hitched his wagon so tightly to this coach that
But he's like the opposite of Doug Armstrong. It was all just like bullshit. That's what I like about
it. Well, it was all bullshit because he knew that it wasn't working,
and he was
but he had given him a contract extension, and he wanted to not look like an idiot. So he tried to make it work with everything he could. You know, he made the Vanek trade. He got the Weber-Subban trade. Like, he did all these things to try to show that the faith he put in Therrien wasn't misguided. But it was misguided. And at this point, you can do it. But to me, the biggest thing about this firing and this hiring, the biggest thing is Carey Price. Like, the whole thing pivots on Price. Price is having his worst season in 4 years. You get rid of the coach who obviously he's lost confidence in. And right, I mean, there are times in the last 2 months where Carey Price literally looked like me playing the outfield as a fourth grader, picking fucking daisies. You know, he was lost at times on some of the goals he gave up because his head's not there. And what do? You get rid of the guy who kind of lost your star goalie, and you get a guy who demonstrably is a good coach for goaltenders. So I think that I've identified that your best player, your franchise guy, is fucking miserable, and you bring in a guy who is going to give him all the love and care and attention that he could possibly want, because he turned fucking Tim Thomas into a Vezina winner and Rask into one of the best goalies in the world.
Oh, wow. You're gonna give Timmy and Tuca Claude as the reason why.
Well, it's not just Claude, but I think it was always...
You French-Canadian coach loving son of a bitch.
I think it was always four factors. And I know that people always talk about it being a trinity up there in
four
Boston.
Four factors with Greg Wyshynski.
But it's four factors, and it was this. It was the system, it was Chara, it was Bergeron, and it was the goaltender. But the idea that it wasn't the coaching system... along with those three things is nonsensical, because here's some breaking fucking news about the game of hockey. Sometimes those guys leave the ice.
Get out of here.
Yeah, it's true. Not the goalie, unless they're under certain conditions they do. But the other two guys eventually leave the ice. Yeah,
that's what they call a line change.
Yeah, right.
Oh, I thought it was like a change of the message from the coach, like a new line.
No,
like a spoken line,
nope.
Like in a movie.
No, it's not, and it's not like in the Kings locker room where you put your straw down in a different place.
Oh, there it is.
There it is.
The four line challenge brought to you by the Los Angeles Kings. Coming to this year's All-Star Game in Los Angeles. I really do feel like if Claude Julien was available last year, Michel Therrien would have gotten fired last year. The second Claude became available, it was, I don't want to say it was a no-brainer. I was surprised by how surprised everybody was. Like, it's not, like, it's surprising when you do it so quickly, for sure, but, like, he wasn't dead man walking. He was as close to it as possible. And you look back in hindsight, all the moves he made are for now.
Yeah.
Andrew Shaw, Shea Weber. And now you go out and get a coach that can win for you now and in the future, too. It's not like Claude's going to like fall off the cliff coaching-wise in 4 years.
Again, I think the surprise is that he had a chance to get rid of him before, and he was so vigilant in not doing it.
Right, but there was no one to replace him with.
Right.
That's my thing. It was just all bullshit. Yeah.
Back to what Mike Babcock said when Julien got fired.
Nope, make sure you got yourself somebody who's even better if you're going to fire that guy.
You don't want to waste the opportunity.
Hey, don't get yourself a Blashill. Oh, yeah. You can, yeah. You're going to replace Mike with a Blashill. Sure. Okay.
That poor bastard. Waiting in the wings forever. He finally gets there, and Pavel Datsyuk's like, see ya.
Yeah.
Got to go to a country where they don't like the gay people as much as me. Sorry.
The way it's going to work for me here in Toronto is Toronto is if, I go one of two ways. I leave on my own accord, or they replace me with Scotty Bowman.
Or I have a heart attack on the bench from watching my goaltender faced 41 shots in two periods.
By the way, it's all happening in Toronto right now. The thing that we've talked about all season long is happening. Fucking Marner's going to win the points title. Marner's going to win the points title. Yeah. Laine's going to win the goals title. Austin Matthews isn't going to lead the rookies in either category.
And he's going to win the Calder.
Is he, though? Can he win the Calder if he doesn't lead in either goals or points?
Here's my thing. I think it's super duper tight, and the guy who might... No, it's not that. We're not doing the analingus thing again. Let's say he plays 54 games, he wins 32 games, he's got a .931 save percentage. How do you not give it to Matt Murray?
I would agree with you.
He's not there yet.
I would agree with you.
But
I think that there is a certain bias against Murray because he won a cup.
Because he's a rookie.
I agree with you. And I think you can make a case for Werenski. You can make a case for Provorov.
Werenski's kind of faded a little bit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, I think it's those three skaters and Murray. But I didn't realize Marner really pulled that far ahead.
Marner's, like, only a point ahead, yeah, but he's ahead. But that's the thing. I mean, good Ontario boy.
Like, if Patrick Laine scores 38 goals... That impresses me more than a dude with a .930 goals against behind a really good team. But if it's like a 32-goal, 68-point season versus like a 28-goal, 67-point season, and then there's Matt Murray, the only reason Matt Murray's not going to win it, you're right. It's like when, was it Jimmy Howard should have won the Rookie of the Year?
Because he was too old. That was an age thing,
26.
Though. Yeah, it was the age thing.
Yeah, like I just, you're a rookie.
I scored 40 goals in my rookie season. I do pretty well for Winnipeg, and of course, you know, I smelted the Calder Trophy myself in the fires of Mount Doom, but it's good to score goals, I suppose, if you like to score goals like that.
I just want to go out there and win some games. The goals are nice. You know, you want to do everything you can to have a nice, a smooth transition in your rookie year, much like these smooth blades Harry's provides. When you want to shave your face back or a private area, and that's all I want to do is just win some games.
I reach around a goal a game for the Winnipeg Jets. This is
pretty good. You reach around?
I score about a goal a game for the Winnipeg Jets. I do pretty well for myself. I know. I try to do everything I can to help my team, and of course I did travel back in time and impregnate Mitch Marner's mother to create Mitch Marner. So I'm actually Mitch Marner's father, but, you know, the NHL is a good place for rookies to play.
You know, I have concussion, and the head not feel good, but all the time I like to think I could play better when I come back, and I do play better.
It's the part two for me, much like when I had the idea for John Wick 2. And I pitched the script to Keanu, and he wanted to do it, and now I'm just trying to get the team in the playoffs.
I agreed to do John Wick 2, and, you know, I really like doing John Wick 2, and I also like being in John Wick 2, and of course, I don't really know Patrick Laine, but I like being in John Wick 2, and...
I can't believe you haven't seen John Wick 1 or John Wick 2.
I told you before the show, I didn't see John Wick 1 because they kill a dog in it, and I know that's the pivot for the movie, and I love sneakers, and my dog sneakers, and I felt really bad.
You know, people die in Star Wars, like human beings actually die.
Fucking planets get destroyed in Star Wars, like billions and billions of people.
Billions of millions of lives cried out. Or whatever the line is from that movie.
Oh, you mean, oh, what's wrong? Oh, nothing. hundreds of millions of voices cried out in terror and were suddenly silenced.
Yeah.
There's an old parody. I don't know if you've ever seen, probably never seen it, but it was like one of those things that would be on randomly, like really late at night on like one of the cable channels. It was actually called Hardware Wars. It was a parody of Star Wars.
Hmm.
And it was Star Wars, but all the special effects were done with household appliances. Like irons and egg beaters and shit.
I bet you it was like the best show on TV for like 6 years.
No, it was a 15-minute parody that this guy did. Yeah, it was like that kind of thing. But my favorite line of that is because you made me think about that with the Obi-Wan line, where like the guy who's playing Luke is like, what is it? Is it as if 100 million voices all cried out simultaneously and were suddenly silenced? And their Obi-Wan goes, oh no, just a little headache.
And by the way, you can see John Wick 2 without having seen John Wick 1.
I'm really not surprised by that.
No, there's a little continuity, but you really, I can just tell you, at the end of John Wick 1, he gets revenge on everybody, and then John Wick 2 starts. Pretty simple. And it's so great. Oh, it's just so many bullets just blowing up skulls. Oh, it's just good, fun family entertainment for everybody.
I got a good question for you. We're going to play a little game right now.
Oh, we're going to play two games on this episode.
Oh, yeah. We have a quiz coming up, too. I'm going to do this right now. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is kind of a playing off a game that they play on Doug Loves Movies. I'm going to ask you to give me... This is Lifetime Gross, courtesy of Box Office Mojo.
Like Michael Gross, the dad from Family Ties?
Yes, and from Tremors.
It's all Michael all right. Gross trivia?
Listen, we all know what the top three highest grossing Keanu Reeves movies are.
Do we?
Yes.
All the Matrixes?
Yeah.
Oh,
Matrix Reloaded was actually number one. It actually outgrossed the Matrix, and then everybody saw Matrix Reloaded
right.
and said, fuck that!
Yeah,
and then Matrix,
money again.
Matrix Revolutions was third. What are Keanu Reeves, this is according to Box Office Mojo, I don't know if this is adjusted or what, the next three highest grossing Keanu Reeves movies are...
Speed.
That is number five.
So I'm trying to get 4, 5, 6 then.
You're trying to get 4 and 6. I'll give you a hint. It's not either of the John's Wick.
Yeah, the John Wick movie didn't make that much.
But Speed is number five. Can I give you a hint?
No.
Okay.
Not yet.
All right.
Too soon.
Okay. I'm going to say it's non-adjusted based on these.
How about The Boathouse?
Well, The Boathouse is a movie that... may exist, but not
on this list.
It's not the movie you're thinking of. You're thinking of The Lake House.
The Lake House,
in which there's a magic mailbox, and him and Sandra Bullock correspond through it.
Any time travel movie, you're going to get me to sit through it.
That's actually number 11. But I'll give you a hint. Number 4 is romantic comedy, in which he is. In both of these, he's part of an ensemble. I would say.
Oh.
Number 4 is a romantic comedy, and number 6 is a straight up comedy, but a heartfelt comedy.
With Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, I know.
Heartfelt comedy with Keanu Reeves. Oh, Parenthood?
Parenthood is number 6. Well done.
That is not a Keanu Reeves movie. That's unfair.
He got his first boner. That's what little dudes do.
No, that's actually from The Matrix. Yeah, he just refers to his penis that way throughout the whole movie. It's on the cutting room floor, but trust me, I've seen it. I was gonna. Well, you said it's a romantic comedy, so
quid pro quo vis-a-vis, Mr. Neo. You got your first boner. Congratulations! But can you save Zion? Many have tried.
That's the architect, by the way.
Chain Reaction was going to be my guess, but that's not a romantic comedy. Or
it is a bit of a comedy, though.
It is. I am a nuclear physicist.
I'll just tell you.
What is it?
Something's Gotta Give. Do you remember that movie? That was Diane Keaton, I believe, and Alec Baldwin. Oh, wait, no. Diane Keaton and Jack Nicholson.
Oh,
yeah.
Amanda,
and
Amanda,
he is
Amanda
like
Peet's in it too.
He plays a doctor in it.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know.
These aren't Keanu Reeves vehicles. This is unfair. These are just movies that Keanu Reeves happened to be in for like 15 minutes.
Okay, but that's a Keanu Reeves movie.
Oh. That's like, you wouldn't call it an Amanda
Peet
movie.
Well, fucking Bram Stoker's Dracula's on the list. That wasn't a Keanu Reeves movie necessarily.
He's one of the leads, though.
He was one of the leads in Something's Gotta Give.
No, he's not. He's barely in that movie.
Just because you don't watch Nancy Meyers movie.
Bullshit. He plays a doctor and he keeps giving Jack Nicholson the heart stuff because Jack Nicholson takes the Viagra for the boners. I've seen that fucking movie. Don't you dare talk down to me about Keanu Reeves' movie collection, my friend.
What can I do you for? I need some boner pills.
My boner's getting me some trouble with my heart. Diane Keaton wants to become a nun and work with the young pope.
Where's Diane Keaton?
She's at home, washing her tights. All right. Listen, we're going to take a short break. Hopefully, we're going to have a secret special guest to bring you, and we'll see you on the other side. Joining us now on the line is the man responsible for us being on Nerdist Sports, and a man who knows a thing or two about Montreal. And a man who...
A man.
Here's a man
this
who...
This is a man.
This is a man who... A man who enthusiastically wanted to be on the podcast this week to talk about the firing of Michelle Therrien. It's Jonah Carey.
Jonah Carey is on my phone. Clothes home. Clothes home. Hi, Jonah.
Trash can Therrien is gone.
How happy are you still in the afterglow of your Claude comeback?
I might orgasm during the course. He's terrible. What are we doing? Why did we wait this long? And it's interesting too because they're coming out with denials. They're like, oh well, you know, it has nothing to do with Julian being available. I mean, I hope they're telling the truth because the guy was, again, a trash can. Like, he should have been fired a long time ago. So I'd like to believe that's true. I don't believe it, actually.
Did you think that Claude Julien would ever come back to coach the Habs is the question?
Well, listen, recycling is good for the environment, especially when you live under 8 feet of snow all winter. So I guess. No, listen, I put up a Twitter poll yesterday. After this happened, I said, "Who's going to be the next coach? Is it going to be Mario Tremblay? Is it going to be Alan Avinio?
Yes.
Maybe Zombie Toblake will come back. I don't know. I can see Di Carbono. Where's Pierre Mondieu? Can we get Bill Root in the mix? Let's get every 80s Habs player." It's so silly that it happened this way. But listen, I mean, the bottom line is that we could be cynical about the recycling. We could be cynical about the bilingual aspect, despite the fact that I myself am bilingual and believe that it's, you know, an important thing for people who live there. I still am cynical about it. But Julien's a good coach on his merit. If you were the Tampa Bay Lightning or whoever, you'd be like, oh, yeah, that guy's a good coach. He's available on my hire. So I don't have a problem with that at all. Yeah.
Well, since you're bilingual and you're from the Montreal area, why don't you coach the team next? Why even bother going with ex-Canadian? Let's get Jonah Carey in there to get Shea Weber, get the most out of Shea Weber.
You forget, first of all, that I'm bilingual, but I don't have a French name. If I was Claude Carey,
no,
that's a different story.
It's all in the pronunciation.
But, yeah, if you were Jonah. Yeah,
Kelly.
I would.
But here's the thing, Joe, I want to ask you: is there as much coach recycling in baseball as there is in hockey, or does one sport have more than the other?
I think baseball's changed. You could have made that case 30 years ago. A Dallas Green must manage 55 different teams. In no case was he good, or man.
He had a good manager name though. Dallas Green.
And Dallas Green's been phenomenal, no question about it. But, the thing that's changed in baseball is you have a lot of guys coming in, a lot, actually, who have never managed to the point that it's almost flipped back. It used to be that, you know, kind of having the fresh-faced outsider was like, oh, you know, we'll never do that. We have to stick to the old grizzled guy. And now everybody is this way. And it oftentimes it's a respected ex-player, in fact, pretty much every time, right? So Don Mattingly had little to no experience. Dave Roberts. Kevin Cash for Tampa Bay Rays. It's just a bunch of guys like that who come in and they're good baseball minds and the organization knows them and so they'll hire them. So I think that, you know, the way that I look at hockey is basically the way that baseball was in 1985. you know, both in terms of where we are analytically, where we are in coaching changes, where we are in hidebound management, hidebound commissioner. The sport is a wonderful sport aesthetically, as much as I believe baseball is, but it's being held back by these institutional traditions that are ridiculous. And the thing that really kills me is you'll have organizations, and I'm not going to name which one, but you could probably guess, where you've got brilliant minds somewhere. Good guess. You've got brilliant minds somewhere in the organization, and they're not being unleashed the way that they should because they're being run by the same old dudes. And so it's very frustrating that, you know, we're on the cusp. Like, you can see it happening. And by the way, I don't think that, I know you guys certainly are not, but I'm not either. I might be a stats inclined guy, but it's not like I'm some Corsi slave or whatever. But the whole point of analytics and snapping out old traditions is not, oh, yeah, we want to check our boxes on our whatever spreadsheet. It's that we just want a better product. We want, you know, faster pace, higher scoring, better personnel decisions. We just want the sport to be better. And so when you've got these traditions that are holding things back and we need this guy for grit or we won't change the league because of X, it's just because it's taking a great sport and it's making it merely very good. That's my whole frustration with the whole thing. And the Habs, by the way, have been a little bit guilty of this too, largely as a Terrian who just insists on kind of clinging to this extremely old-school system, and now he's gone and raised
you. You know what else 1985 baseball has in common with hockey today?
What's that?
Cocaine. Without question.
Now, Jonah...
I've been listening to the Puck 2 podcast. I was actually waiting for that.
Now, Jonah... Are there also baseball managers that smoke as much as Michel Therrien did?
Like Jimmy Leland? Who else? Who else you got?
Good question. I think my favorite smoking thing is Lottie Divac. Because it wasn't that long ago. Like, Divac played at a time, you know, we remember the guys of his era. And, like, there's a famous picture of what Len Dawson smoking during a halftime of Super Bowl I.
Yeah.
In 1967. Lottie Divac is smoking in, like, 2003. He's not coaching. He's a player. I feel like that trend, like, it's nice that coaches smoke. Okay, that's cute or whatever. But they don't have to go out and skate on a 3-on-2. You've got a player doing it. I think that's much more impressive.
Who's going to be the first baseball manager to vape in the dugout?
Oh, wow. Joe Madden.
All right, now listen. Jonah, we were both. I think the big surprise here is that Mark Bergevin actually pulled the trigger after kind of standing by his man for as long as he did. Did you think that he had it in him to make a coaching change this season, or did you think it'd have to be after they crapped out in the playoffs?
I can give you my unattached, you know, hockey specific reason, or I can give you my here's where I am with the world reason. You pick which one, I'll tell you.
I want both. I want the crazier one.
All right. Well, I mean, the second one is Trump has humbled me and everything sucks and I want a meteor to hit. An asteroid can't hit the Earth. They'll just go around in a big circle. Yeah. I want a meteor to hit the Earth. But what's the hockey reason?
You guys are so... I feel like we're just so in sync. It's perfect. Although Puzzer did resign today, or dropped out today. That was great.
What a Puzzer.
That guy and his Carl's Jr. Whatever. So... The answer to your question is, you know, not quite as cynical as with the world event stuff, but yeah, I did think that Bergevin would kind of hold firm because what was he waiting for, right? I mean, we've just seen example after example, and I don't even just mean the macro stuff. I think I might have brought this up with you on the last time I was on the podcast, but I'm friends with Arvin Boss, who's great, and what we would go back and forth on Twitter about the idea, it was just a small thing, but it was so indicative. That P.K. Subban would be playing on the right side on the power play, which P.K. Subban has one of the best one-timers I've ever seen, and you cannot really one-time, it's much more difficult to do that from that side. If you're on the left, the pass can come over to you, and you can just, you know, wind up and blast it from the point. You know, I don't know that much about hockey. Shouldn't the coach and the Habs know these things? And it's a small thing, but it was just sort of typical. And I have to say, I will say one thing about Chris and about the Habs in general. I've come around a little bit. I'm not happy with the Subban Weber trade in the long term, but at least I get what they're trying to do. And I think it was you, Dave. I'm pretty sure it was your post that I read today talking about what the Habs. In fact, it was your post. You know, that they acquired Shaw, not great. They went and got Radulov, great. And they went out and got Weber, which, you know, long term, not great. But this is a team that is specifically recognizing that they might have the best player in hockey or one of the top, probably two, Crosby or Price, name your guy. And then, you know, beyond that, they're a team that's built for defense. You have a few decent goal scorers, and that's about it. And specifically, they're a team built to win now. So go out and get the assets now, and that's fine. I respect that. But it's not entirely clear to me that Therrien, if you believe that, that doesn't necessarily mean that Therrien was the coach who was best equipped to do that either. Like, I'm following along the philosophy halfway, but I'm still sort of stuck with, all right, fine. You know, if you want to make a suicide pact with the hat and you're convinced that Carey Price is going to be a Dallas star in 2 years, fine, go ahead and do what you want to do. But at least we're going to actually try to win the Cup and get the best at that again. And I thought your point was germane, Dave, that the trade deadline is so fraught with mistakes. You know, you can trade away draft picks and things that like to haunt you, and it's so hard to actually really, truly upgrade your team in a blockbuster deal. You know, you can get a Shattenkirk type, and that's about the best you can hope for. You're not getting a star, and you're probably hurting your cap and whatever. They went out and they improved their team gigantically by doing nothing except capitalizing on Don Sweeney being a stupid idiot.
Yeah, they're a team. They have young guys. They have Galchenyuk. They have Deneau, but I mean, Thomas Plekanec, these guys are coming to the end of the road. So you go out and you get Shea Weber. Shea Weber's not going to be getting better over the next 4 years. Go for it now. Push all in.
He's a very good player right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Right now he's fine. But I mean.
I have a question for you guys.
So, yeah.
Galchenyuk has been written about a lot and wish and rest your peace on Galchenyuk. And, you know, he's 23. He's very talented. He has a chance to be a really, really good player. What do you think happens now? To me, you know, I sort of look at the team and I say, okay, they're probably going to perform better, but Galchenyuk is the one sort of enigma on the team. Everybody else fits. Radulov has been not only a good player, but a joy. You know, Price hopefully has shaken off that crazy case of the yips that he got, at least for the most part. But what happens? Is Galchenyuk going to start playing better? How are they going to use him now under Julian? I'm sort of stuck on that. I don't know what's going to happen.
Two things. First off, the crazy case of the yips that Carey Price had is a disease centralized to Montreal called coachitis. It infected Patrick Waugh to the point where it drove him mad. In this case,
Beyonce is headlining coachitis this year. By the way, I'm really excited. I'm going to
get it. Price had a mild case, but Galchenyuk's an interesting one because, like, essentially the argument is that he is the only guy on that roster that is that has the ability to be a number one center, and you have to put him in that role between Pacioretty and Radulov and let him just be that. And there's some evidence to the idea that, you know, him, Pacioretty, and Gallagher were a very good line last year, but I don't think they want to break up Pacioretty and Radulov. So you put him in between those guys, you let him make mistakes, and you let him blossom, because there's no reason to be dicking around with this kid if you think he's got top-line ability. If you don't, then you got to cut bait because he's going to be due about $6 or $7 million in short order, based on his stats and his contract. So it's kind of shit or get off the pot with him. But I would shit on Alex Galchenyuk. I would just take a big glowing shit.
Well, here's where Greg's wrong. Claude's there now. He's got a young cornerstone foundation center. So what you do is you trade him to Dallas for like 3 bit parts. And you just build around those 3 guys for a year, and then you lose them all in trades. That's how it works.
But I mean, in all seriousness, I think that the point is germane about what you have. And it feels like the Habs in some way have been run the last couple of years aspirationally rather than what you have. What you have is a great goalie. You have 3 or 4 really good forwards, and you've got a couple of really good defensemen, whether it's Subban, you know, Weber, that's fine. So take advantage of what you have. If they had some, like, fading Adam Oates type, like a very solid player, not quite in his prime, but didn't make mistakes that you wanted to make if you're number one center, that's fine. But, I mean, they got basically fuck all behind Galchenyuk. They're just not strong up the middle. So just, you know, it's almost like you don't have a choice, this idea of letting him blossom or not. I mean, who else are you going to? I don't think Vinny Danfus is walking through that door, is what I'm saying.
I mean, not for nothing. He's probably their third best center if they put him on the team right now.
That's probably true.
That's not a bad signing.
Joan, I only have one more question for you on this momentous week as a Habs fan. What are you most excited about? Your playoff series against the Bruins or your playoff series against the Leafs?
Oh, they're not going to get either.
No, right? They're going to play the first round against whoever it is in the Metro.
Yeah, they're going to because Washington's going to get the shitty wild card team. This is going to be the 5th team in the Metro.
Yeah, I think the Leafs can catch the second wild card.
They're like 9 points back.
Also, you're assuming that the Senators can't catch Montreal. Despite being
a
only
very good point. The Habs are probably going to get, yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah.
Listen, there's a lot of variables involved. The Leafs would be exciting. I mean, the Habs and the Bruins, that was my childhood, right? They would play every year. The Habs would beat them. The Bruins would complain about something. Or Bruins fans would complain about something. That was about it. Finally, the Bruins overtook the Habs in the hierarchy. And I don't know, I think that story's been told. I never really hated Toronto sports, I think, the way that a lot of Montrealers do, whether it's the Blue Jays or the Leafs or whatever. The Leafs I always just consider sort of like the Cubs. Like, yeah, you know what, they're the Leafs, they're mismanaged. They have crazy, ravenous fans who really like to win, but they can't, and that's fine. And they're a fun team now. Like, I really, truly have animus for the Bruins. I'm really not. Daniel Carr can burn in hell unless they trade for him, which case I love him. That was a great idea. One of you wrote about that, too. I love that idea. But the Leafs are, you know, like, I like Dubas. I like watching Matthews. There's a fun element to it. I think it would kind of restone that rivalry. Don't forget, they used to be in different conferences. That was my youth. Like, we didn't, the Habs never played the Leafs because the Leafs never made the finals, and that was that. This is a chance to really, for a younger generation especially, oh, maybe we'll start talking about, well, the Habs have no equivalent, but Matthews versus whoever the best players are on the Habs. Maybe that'll become a thing for the next 5 or 6 years. That'd be really cool. So I think from a hockey standpoint, that would be a lot of fun, and man, it would absolutely grip Canada. Obviously, NBC wouldn't tell about any of the games. Nobody would want to watch that. But in Canada, that would be a big deal.
How far are they going? How far are they going with Claude this year?
Price, man. Like, we're having all this analysis about Julian and what's happening with Galchenyuk. If Price stands on his head, they can honestly go to the Cup, and if he doesn't, they'll lose in 4 games in the first round. Like, I don't think it's that complicated. He's just so ridiculously talented, but goalies are like pitchers, right? I was going to say even Clayton Kershaw, right? Kershaw's perfect in the regular season, and then he cannot beat the Cardinals in the playoffs and just absolutely get hammered. Yeah, that's how I look at Price. Price to me is like Kershaw. Like, he's clearly the best guy. But something could happen, and if it happens, they cannot possibly win, if that's the case.
Like Jonah just said, goalies are like pitchers. They're all on coke. Wait, did you say you didn't? Oh, okay. I misunderstood then.
I believe that all drugs should be legalized, by the way. So whatever. Have all the coke you want if it helps.
The Jonah Carey podcast is...
Tim Raines wrote a rail of cocaine into the Hall of Fame.
Whee!
He was betraying about that.
The Jonah Carey podcast is one of our favorite podcasts. It's the other sports podcast on Nerdist.
It's one of the two best sports podcasts on Nerdist.
And also, you recently had Scott Boras on. That's a nice get.
Yeah, so I went out to Orange County. Scott appeared on the podcast Monday for this week's pod, and it was great. I asked him, I don't know, I feel like with the whole Trump and just the world and everything that's happening, it's hard for me to just talk to somebody and say, hey, tell me about the sports. You know, so Boras is a guy who is, you know, hated very broadly, and he talked about it's okay to be hated because he's just trying to stand up for his client specifically. So the fans are not going to be happy if the client goes away. The team is not going to be happy, and most of the media is just kind of, you know, they'll follow the cues of whatever the establishment wants to say.
The establishment.
Boras stands up for workers' rights better than just about anybody. I understand it's hard to be sympathetic of a worker, quote-unquote, is making $20 million a year. But he's still, we don't have workers' rights, right? Unions are going away and all that. So I kind of asked him broader questions about things like that. Not only about, hey, tell me about the A-Rod thing, or tell me about what you think of that, but what do we do about unions in America? And he had a really thoughtful, thought-provoking kind of answer, and we got into all that, too. So, for better or for worse, I think I'm in that zone a little bit with the podcast lately, where they're definitely having some, like, True Blue sports guests on and all that stuff. Like Sean Merriman is coming up soon, and we really talked about football and things of that nature. But in this case, it was, all right, I got Scott Boras, here's an opportunity, let's get real. So,
well, awesome.
Like that, I think it was a lot of fun.
Well, congratulations on that, on all your success and all your various gigs, and mostly on Claude.
Thanks, Claude. Hopefully I'll see you in March.
All right, buddy.
Yeah.
Take care.
Yep, see you, buddy.
Thanks to Jonah Carey, our mentor and sage and Montreal fanboy, for joining us. We have two rules on this show. The first is no current players. Maybe we'd bend that if it was like Connor. No, he's kind of boring.
I don't want to talk to any 19-year-old about hockey for 40 minutes. I'll go insane.
And then the other one is nothing on the phone. As you know, this is only the second time we've had somebody on the phone. The first time was geologist from Animal Collective because his entire interview was lost.
Yeah, that was our fault.
But this time we wanted to have an emergency phone call with Jonah Carey to talk about the hiring of Claude.
Claude, eh?
Claude, he's on Claude 9.
Oh, God.
Claude. Claude days are over. Two things we should talk about real quick. Unless this happens in the next like 15 minutes, we probably won't be able to talk too much about it.
We have podcasts tomorrow.
But it could.
We have separate podcasts.
Gustav Nyquist got an in-person hearing for smacking Jared Spurgeon in the face with a stick. He said, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that.
Total accident.
If this comes down, we'll talk about it. But as of right now, I would say six. Does that make sense to you, or the
angle
more?
Get exactly six.
Yeah,
it's just, you know, they won't. They, you should get 10. They'll get six.
And the really weird shit that happened over the weekend was the Antoine Vermette thing that went down, where he smacked the linesman in the leg with his stick after he didn't like the way the puck was dropped on a faceoff.
I have complete sympathy in that case because not because I'm in favor of assaulting officials or anything. But
okay,
because,
Dave Weidman.
Because like the puck was dropped, he wasn't ready, he was frustrated, and he wasn't trying to like take out the linesman's knee or his leg or anything. He was just kind of giving him like a little tap on the, like, come on, like one of those, like, come on. He wasn't like, I'm going to murder you. He was just, come on.
Right.
And you can't do that, of course, but I don't know. I feel like him getting more games than Nyquist is going to be stupid.
Randy Carlyle said after the game, to me, these are things that the league reviews. We have a view on it. And they have a view on it. Whatever they decide, we have to live with. Obviously, the puck was dropped when our player was not ready. I looked at it and said, well, why is he dropping the puck? All of a sudden, it looked like as if he was tapping him and just telling him a blow-the-whistle type thing. It wasn't really a vicious or any type of malice thing. He wasn't trying to hurt anybody. It was more of a tap to blow the whistle type thing, because usually what happens if they do drop the puck unfairly, the linesman or the referee will blow the whistle and reset it. Like, and then he put his dick in a toaster.
That's such a nothing quote, but it's exactly what happened.
It's exactly what you're trying to say. The faceoff was bullshit. He was trying to say the faceoff's bullshit, redo it.
Right.
And then the only way to do that apparently is to smack the linesman on the thigh with your stick.
Like, Gustav Nyquist got jammed in the legs, was pissed off, and decided to see if he could put his stick through someone's cheek. Like a murder in some movie where, like, the knife goes in through one cheek and out the other. Wow. Vermette, I feel like when he started to do the slash, felt like the linesman was going to be closer. He kind of got away. He starts reaching.
Oh, yeah.
But
no, he's an advanced alien creature, like an Arrival. We just don't speak his language.
Who, Vermette?
Vermette, yeah, where he is able to communicate through physical contact with officials.
So this is what we're going to do now. You're going to reference the Arrival that I've never seen. I'm going to reference John Wick 2.
First of all, it's not the Arrival. It's just Arrival. The Arrival is the Charlie Sheen one with the aliens with the legs that bend the wrong way.
That's a great movie.
And that's how you know they're aliens. Right. You know, some movies are real subtle about it, like their eyes will glow for a second, or maybe they don't share a memory with the body they took over. In The Arrival, you could tell who the aliens are because it's the ones whose legs bend the wrong way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's easier for the viewer at home. And The Arrival, that movie came out, what, like 96, 97?
Mm-hmm.
Look where we are with global warming.
Right.
That movie was ahead of its time. That movie had a conspiracy theory for why aliens were making the planet hotter.
People never talk about that movie within the context of the two movies that come out in the same year that are on the same subject, like Tombstone and Wyatt Earp, or like Volcano and Dante's Peak. That movie came out, I believe, around the same time as Contact. Like, I believe that was sort of the B-grade response to Contact. It's like, here's a story like based on a Carl Sagan book, and like it's got Jodie fucking Foster in it, and Robert Zemeckis is directing it, and it's just this big grandiose thing about we're not alone in the universe. How do we respond to that? Said movie studio. Oh, I know. Charlie Sheen and CGI aliens that hop around like grasshoppers, and it's about global warming.
Speaking of global warming, I got a hot take.
Oh, please.
The Arrival was better than Contact. Contact was the first movie I remember watching and seeing the ending and being so fucking mad at the ending that I wasted two goddamn hours of Matthew McConaughey as a fucking priest just so she could go see her fucking dead dad at the end. And the other part, too, at the end is, like, they have the whole hearing because she's wearing the fucking camera and, you know, the camera records nothing but gray, you know, snow or whatever. And nobody notices that it recorded 21 hours of it. They walk out of there and Angela Bassett, the James Woods, how come you didn't point out that there was 24 hours of it? And I was like, really? Nope, nobody else spotted this. And then you find out Carl Sagan didn't write the ending to because he died.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's how that happened.
I'm trying to say if there are aliens out there, they don't believe in God, sir.
Yeah.
How y'all think that they, what do they do? That, all right, I don't even go to church or nothing.
I'm just a sexy priest. It's going to seduce Jodie Foster over the course of this movie.
I lose an alien single in 10 days.
Close your eyes. Can you see it? Can you see the alien?
Here, I got an alien single for you. Signal for you.
That movie sucked.
I didn't like Contact either.
Fucking what's the guy's name from? He was in every movie for like 15 years. He plays the blind guy in it.
David Strathairn.
No. That's the guy from
That's the guy from Sneakers who was blind. Yeah. Wait, he wasn't that. Well, I thought he was blind in that too.
No. It's he's the guy who plays the creepy guy in Go. You know the movie Go.
Oh, David William Fisher, the guy who was in The Dark Knight.
Yeah,
in the bank robbery scene.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah. He's like Clarice. I can hear or whatever fucking Jodie Foster's name is in the movie. She's Clarice in every movie I see her in, but when her fucking dad materializes out of the fucking stars, I wanted to just grab my fucking TV and throw it out the window.
Dr. Lecter, tell me where the aliens are. Dr. Lecter!
She puts the alien in the housing. I can't do it.
That's not an alien, that's Jim Pembry, goddammit!
The thing I like about aliens, they get older. I stay the same priest.
That was a pretty good young pope audition for McConaughey in that movie. He could have been the young pope.
Maybe he's the young pope in season two.
Did you just give away spoiler?
You don't know what you don't know at the end of episode 10. You don't know what happens.
Okay,
so
but it's not official that like nothing, there could be a
there's no
a continuation.
Official, there's no official unofficial anything at this point.
But you because he. So Lozo saw the finale. I didn't see it yet, but he, apparently my guess that he sprouts leathery bat wings doesn't come to fruition.
He gives a 10-minute speech at the end without giving away any spoilers. That's much like Joey when he's trying to write the vows for Monica and Chandler, and he's just like holding and caring and loving and sharing. It's a speech like that for like 8 minutes, but it's good somehow. I can't explain why it's good. It's very good.
The thing about the Vermette thing that I find interesting, assuming that they accept this 10-game suspension, is that it would have been the first time that the NHLPA could test the new arbitrator. Remember they got rid of the guy who made the Weidman ruling because the NHL's not petulant? And then but they have a new person in. So it would have been an interesting thing to see them test the new system, but I don't think they will.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. I mean, they can live without Antoine Vermette for 10 games.
Yeah, right.
That's not a problem for the Ducks. we're going to play a game.
Yeah, you have a game for me to play.
Because you're always dropping these quizzes on me.
Yeah.
With your Star Wars and your Finns
you
and
dropped
your
quiz on
yesterday
me.
Was Valentine's Day.
Ooh.
And a website called BookRiot.com put out the list of the 100 best sports romance erotic novels, essentially.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
All right.
100 of them. And they all have, like, weird titles based on like a sports term from that sport and like something sexy. Like I'll just grab something at random here.
Right.
Long Hard Ride. What the hell is Tim Hines doing?
Is definitely about rodeo.
Bull riding, correct.
Okay, that's the same deal, right? Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So, but there's a bunch of hockey ones on here that of course have the same sort of thing. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna read you a book title.
Okay.
And you have to determine if it's a real book title on this list or something perverted I made up this morning.
So let's see. So as usual we have like Yummy in My Tummy, Only for a Dummy. So this one would be this one would be Book or Crook.
All right, Book or Crook.
Okay.
That's what we'll call it. All right, number one. Breakaway Hearts.
Book.
That's correct.
Thank you.
By Krista McHugh, hockey star Ben Kelly has retreated to his mountain cabin in the ski town of Cascade, BC to recuperate from a season-ending knee surgery and contemplate his future in the NHL. He never expects to run into the one woman who got away. 9 years may have passed, but nothing has dulled the explosive chemistry between them. Now he wants more than just one night.
Mm-hmm.
Breakaway Dreams.
Breakaway
dreams. Hearts.
Breakaway. That could be easily a Katy Perry song.
It could be anything. I thought it was All right, number two. Body check. Body check.
Crook.
Body check is a book.
Oh, boy.
It is a real, real book. It's number 19 on this list.
Pat Fafontaine is a former NHL player who falls in love with a TSA agent during a full body search.
I'm not going to read the entire plot, but basically this involves the Stanley Cup champion, New York Blades.
Of course it does.
Publicist Jana McNeil gets it on with somebody named Ty Gallagher. He's a captain on a mission to get his team to win the cup again. At any cost.
At any cost.
There's an ellipsis there.
All right.
All right, number three, going five hole.
That's definitely a crook.
Of course it
is. There's no way.
Going five hole by Jenna Smith is about a man who plays goalie who likes to have sex. No, that's not it. All right, number four, taking shots.
I'm going to say it's a book.
That is a book.
Yeah.
Taking shots. There's
wait, is it spelled like taking S-H-O-T-Z? Because the guy's name is like Brent Shots.
Even better. The plots are so unbelievable. And they keep referencing the NHL too. Ellie Fisher never thought she was good enough. Let it be her job, her weight, her love life, nothing. That is until she meets Shay Adler. After doing a promotional shoot for the NHL team, the Assassins, she meets the hunky hockey player who shoots a puck, shattering her world.
Oh, so it is. It's like based on Shea Weber.
Yeah, I guess so.
He shot the puck so hard that he knocked off those paint cover overalls and showed her the real beauty.
She took off her glasses and he was like, wow, you're
her hair around.
You're the Stanley Cup in my heart. Number five.
And she's like, what was that? Just a stupid bet between you and Brian Suter? Shay Adler.
He's just like, I don't want your life. That's a different sport.
It's fine.
Number five, filling the net.
Crook.
Yeah, that's crook.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to think of middling dirty ones.
Well, I could tell all the crook ones because they sound like really bad hockey blog names that were taken about 10 years ago.
Filling the net by DJ Adams is about a man who... Number six.
Filling a net. That would be the name of it, filling a net. Like, her name isn't...
I should have said Annette instead of Annette.
You would have had it, yeah.
Annette Jablonski never thought she would fall in love with a goalie.
Jablonski.
The only thing tender in this goaltender is his heart. Sticks and Stones.
That's a book.
No, I made that up.
Damn it.
Because the stones are like the balls in the joke.
Oh, you see, okay, Sticks and Stones by J.L. Hadley. Connor McFlavid is a hot young rookie in the NHL, which apparently you can use in any fucking book. And he falls in love with Shannon Hurler, who is Canada's hottest rookie curler, and they fall in love. Sticks and Stones.
Not for nothing, we could write a book like this in like an hour. You can use the NHL brand apparently in these books, and then you just change a team.
We were
name.
So stressed out. Remember how? By the way, we have a book out called "The 100 Greatest Players of All Time" and their stuff. We were so stressed out about like whether we could use the word NHL in our title, and like everybody apparently just like. And then they had passionate sex on the NHL logo in front of Gary Bettman, and this is like, all right,
their love was taboo,
yeah.
So they made love in the most taboo way on the locker room floor logo. Sticks and Stones by Greg Wyshynski and Dave.
And he's
logo.
Like, hey, get off the logo, and she's like, I already did.
Oh, God, this writes itself. No wonder why people do this. Like, there's 100 of these. Like, some of the names on here, like, there's one called Between Heats.
Mm-hmm.
That's a swimming one.
Oh, I thought it was about dog training.
Oh, there you go. That's the dog sports romance novels. You read them to your dog. And that bitch got off so quick and so hot. Rusty, put your tongue back in your mouth.
Oh, sneakers, no. What's next?
All right. One More Shot.
That's definitely a book.
That's by Victoria Deneau. The plot's kind of boring. Jesse and Jordan, and there's love, and then there's someone has sky blue eyes, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
Hard Knocks.
That's a crook.
That's a book.
Hmm.
Hard Knocks by
Ruby Lang. It's about hockey?
It's about neurologist Helen Chang Frobisher.
What?
She's on a mission to ban hockey from Portland to prevent the kind
of... She's the town elders from Footloose in this one? Helen what?
Helen Chang Frobisher.
That is definitely somebody's, like, elementary school teacher who they hated. They've now fantasy casted in a novel as the town elder trying to rid the town of hockey.
The thing I don't get, though, is, like, how this is, like, a romance, because it's about her... Because she's anti-concussive brain injury, because she's a neurologist, obviously, and it says, Oregon Wolves player Adam Magnus is desperately trying to secure his career and his retirement despite the team's dismal record. So, like, does he hook up with the
Do you watch? Have you seen all the Mighty Ducks movies? Isn't Magnus one of the Icelandic players or something like that? I wonder if that's a combination of Adam Banks and, like, one of the I don't know. I never really watched any.
Magnus always makes me think of, like, ESPN2 at, like, 5:30 in the morning when they'd have the World Strongman competition on. Magnuson would, like, throw a tire.
Yeah,
into,
like they would throw, like, a tree trunk and shit. It was always very impressive.
Tracy Wolf has a book on here. I wonder if that's the same Tracy Wolf.
Hmm.
It's called Shredded.
So does she? I wonder if she succeeds in ridding the town of hockey.
I'm curious about this one because, like, I don't know where the romance is. I guess, like, see, like, I'm picturing Portland as, like, a junior team, and she's, like, showing up and, like, you know, wheeling, like, 19-year-olds.
What is that? Is that the sound of blades that I hear? Yeah. Somebody playing hockey?
She's like John Lithgow. She's totally bald and walks around with, like, her AMA Bible and just quotes passages about concussions.
Everybody cut laces.
Everybody skate loose. Skate loose. All right, number 9. This one's going to be tough.
All right.
Keep your eye on the puck.
That's a crook.
I was trying to do a play on your book.
I know that you were doing that. My book, Take Your Eye Off the Puck, How to Watch Hockey by Knowing Where to Look, available wherever books are sold. I know exactly what you're doing.
I wanted you to get a plug-in for your book.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, I never get to do that on this show.
And the last one, Hot Puck, Cold Ice.
Holy shit. I'm going to say crook.
Yeah, I made that up.
Oh, damn. I was really hoping that was the big switcheroo one. Puck, Cold Ice.
How do you see it going? Tell me a story. What comes to mind?
Okay, so Hot Puck, Cold Ice. Puck Lanigan is a star player in the NHL for the Barbarians. Angela Isley is... really important publicist.
She's cold, though, right?
She doesn't have time for, like, a social life because she's very professional, working in her profession. One night they meet and they realize that she needs to loosen up and get more in touch with her social side. And Puck Lanigan realizes that it's not all about hockey all the time.
Puck Lanigan.
Hot Puck, Cold Ice by J.L. McDougals.
Seriously, like we're probably giving away free pitch ideas for, like, romantic novels on this podcast that someone else is going to.
But you know what's funny? Like, I thought most of those are going to be, like, erotic fiction, but there's a certain kinship between the Lifetime movie and hockey novels, because a lot of them were sort of
they do feel like
the
that,
only yeah. thing missing was that at no point in any of those books did someone crash their car in a small snowy town and then reconnect with, like, somebody there who teaches them the true meaning of Christmas. It's the only difference. I want to talk about real quick the J-Lo show I saw. By the way, for all you Puck Soup food fans, I went to the Taco Bell Cantina in Vegas. And it is fucking awesome. You get beer. You get, they have, you know how, you know, the big plastic yard drinks that you get, like, Fat Tuesdays?
Sure.
They have that with Baja Blast, but you can pick rum, Tito's.
Like, what's Baja Blast?
The Mountain Dew. It's a Mountain Dew slushy, and then they put booze in it, and that's your drink.
What booze goes with Mountain Dew?
Tito's.
Really?
Yeah,
I've mixed some awful shit together in my life. I've never mixed Mountain Dew with anything.
Yeah, neither have I until this revelation. But you order it. The only weird thing about it, like, so basically, if you don't know, it's like a high-end Taco Bell where you get booze. You sit upstairs in a really nice lounge area. There's, like, TVs and shit. It's very cool. The only weird part about it is that for some inexplicable reason, they decided part of the novelty was going to be that you can see them make the food. Now, I don't know about you.
Yeah.
But like, I like the mystery of not knowing what's being done to create my Taco Bell meal. It's not like Chipotle where you want to see the conveyor belt.
Right. Like where if you go to like the pita pit and they throw your chicken on the grill and the chicken grills for like 5 minutes, that's fine. I don't want to know how the hell they get the fried chicken and the chalupa to do that. I don't want to know.
Right.
Some guy's back there like rubbing it against his chest to get the moisture out of it.
Big ups to whoever hit me on Twitter the other day to say that they did my thing, which is to start your meal with a delicious steak quesadilla. I think it's the perfect way to start meal. Now, I saw J-Lo. I've seen Britney in Vegas, and now I've seen J-Lo in Vegas, and here's the difference. One sang, J-Lo, but one has songs, Britney. Because J-Lo has songs, but she literally repeated a song maybe like 20 minutes into the show.
What do you mean?
So she did My Love Don't Cost a Thing to like lead off the show.
And my love don't cost a thing.
No. My love cost a thing. Even if you want me to blow. That song.
That's an Aerosmith cover.
So she played that to start, and then she did like a sexy version while she, by the way, completely ripped off the Madonna part of the concert, the Blonde Ambition tour, where she masturbated on a bed during like a virgin. Like J-Lo basically did that to this song.
God damn it. How dare she do that? Do you have any video?
Well, no videos allowed.
Good.
So here's what happened during the show I want to talk about real briefly. What do you do at a concert? Are you a stand-up guy or are you a sit-down guy? Or does it depend on where the show is?
I would say more often than not I'm stand-up than sit-down. Depends. I mean, I feel like there's points during the course of a concert that are sit-down times.
I think you got to read the room.
Hmm.
This woman who was two rows in front of us did not read the room. One might say that you had a bunch of people that were standing up near the stage in the pit, and then no one else was standing the entire show because we didn't realize at the time that it skews a little older in the room.
Sure.
She was standing in front of what I would say would be conservatively a 75-year-old man, and she got up during the show. And she's the only one, literally the only one in the entire theater.
Vegas doesn't feel
dancing.
Like a stand-up
it's
concert
not.
Show situation to me.
It's not.
Like arenas and stadiums are stand-ups,
and
not
so,
Vegas.
So finally somebody had to basically like...
have that awkward conversation.
Yeah, so the person directly in back of her dude had to be like, hey, you know, can you tell her to sit down? 6-game suspension for Nyquist, by the way.
Oh, nailed it. We're so good at it.
Yeah, we have no reason to go back.
Called it.
But it made me think about like how weird it is that why is it movie theaters are exempt from all of this shit? It's exempt from the national anthem. It's exempt, like we talked about in the previous podcast.
Oh my God, where are you going with this? What are you going to do to the world?
No, I'm saying like at no point am I at a like Harry Potter movie and somebody in front of me stands up when Harry Potter comes out and is like, Harry Potter! And just starts shaking her ass in front of me and blocking the screen because Harry Potter is there. Why are movie theaters one of the only places for true decorum?
I don't know, man. My John Wick theater was pretty fucking jacked up when he was fucking double tapping people in Rome.
But she was told to sit down. And she was drunk out of her gourd.
Of course.
So she spun around, and I believe she said something to the effect of, I've waited my whole fucking life to fucking see this fucking show shake my ass if I want to.
Then she threw up on the old people. Come on.
No, then she sat. She eventually sat down, to her credit.
That's the thing, and is when you're super drunk, your legs eventually tell you to sit down.
And, like, I think it's because she looked behind her and, like, saw, you know,
the whole place.
Wilford Brimley and Estelle Getty as Sophia, and we're like, oh, I'm a monster. I'm a monster. Like, but here's the thing. Like, at the beginning of the show, J-Lo's like, this whole thing is playing out in front of me. And literally as it's playing out in front of me, J-Lo's on stage going to be like, we're here to sing, and if you want to dance, get up and dance. I'm like, J-Lo, you're not helping the situation.
A lot of mixed signals here.
Yeah, a lot of mixed signals from J to the low.
So here are the rules. The rules are... concert at a stadium, concert at arena, stand all you want. Movie theater, Broadway show, don't stand.
Don't
stand. You have like that middle area of like a concert, but it's like in a theater.
That's a really good point.
What do you do there?
Like if you go to a show like Hamilton, right?
Yeah, no one's,
your favorite.
No one's standing up dancing around to fucking.
But like everybody knows the songs, and if they've got their favorite song, why don't you just fucking stand up there and be like, "Yeah, what's up? Song about Britain."
Because then somebody might get booed, and then people at the New York Times might get sad if you booed someone at the fucking Hamilton show. Fucking press on my ass.
Whoa, hot political takes over here.
Sorry. Sorry. People that got mad about booing Mike Pence.
So there you go. I agree. Stadium. Well, again, read your section. Read your section.
Right, but like if you're outside, you're standing up. I think you can't like if you're outside, if you're at like a, you know, you're in like Central Park or any sort of outdoor situation, you can't ask people to sit down.
No, but
arena,
there's no seats.
No, but I mean like you go to Giant Stadium or you're at an amphitheater.
If you're in the upper deck at Giant Stadium for a show, you're standing up. I've never seen a concert. Wait, that's not true. I have seen one, but I was downstairs and I stood up the whole time. I saw Dave Matthews, Beck, and somebody else there.
Oh, that's a good show.
Yeah, thank you.
I did Upper Deck at Bon Jovi, and I stood, and I was in like the mezzanine for a couple of Bruce shows, and I stood for. Yeah, you're rocking out, Bruce.
I feel like Vegas is more of a sit down experience.
It is like it's like I went to go see Cirque du Soleil. I wasn't like up fucking screaming like, "Oh, he caught her! Oh, he caught her! Oh, I love this fucking song. Look at the clowns up there miming. Oh, that's a pretty sweet mime job. Oh."
And then the mushrooms kicked in.
To be honest, I was pretty hammered during the Cirque du Soleil show. I was more focused on not peeing during the show than I was screaming at anything.
All right. Now it's time on the podcast where we dip into the Puck Soup mailbag.
Yeah, let's do this.
And start asking questions that you want us to ask. Like Michael Giordano, who wants to know, how great would it be for Michelle Therrien to replace Dan Bylsma now? Now, it's funny. We didn't really talk about that during our conversations, the idea that there is precedent for firing Michelle Therrien and then winning a Stanley Cup because you fired Michelle Therrien in the middle of towards the end of your season.
It was like whatever, how many years, 7 to the day or whatever it was?
Yeah, close to it. I think
nine
it happened.
Years to the day?
It happened, I think, on the 16th.
8 years
that
day.
Year, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. So
I don't want to see Dan Bylsma fired. You're 5 points out of the playoffs with Dan Bylsma.
I don't want to see it either, but I have a feeling if they don't make the playoffs, he might be in trouble.
No, you can't give a dude fucking 2 years after he took over a team that finished 29th when he got there. No way. He's doing fine.
Do you think Gerard Gallant's going to get hired in Vegas, or do you think it's going to be Capuano? I'm pretty sure it's going to be Capuano.
No one's hiring Jack Capuano.
I think McPhee is. He likes him.
He's not.
He's getting an interview out there.
He just wants to treat him to a weekend in Vegas. See the J-Lo show. Have a yard of Superdew or whatever it's called. Send them back home. He's not getting that job. If you give Jack Cap, okay, yeah. Let's revisit another thing we keep talking about is how you think Vegas is going to be a playoff contender, and I don't. If they hire Jack Capuano, are they going to the playoffs next year?
I mean, the playoffs would be just assumed, and the question is whether or not they win the cup next year. By the way, I've decided after visiting Vegas, and for those asking, there is Golden Knight shit around. No jerseys yet. They got good signage as far as like memorabilia shops and like where to buy the shit. But like you walk past that stadium, you wouldn't know there's a hockey team in town. It's weird.
Yeah.
But here's what I decided. This is the only thing I care about now, but this Vegas team. When you go to the shootout, right? What do you do? How many shots you get in the shootout?
What do you mean?
How many players get to shoot?
In the 3-on-3?
No, in the shootout. It's five, right?
Three.
Five, three.
In the NHL?
Yeah, three, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's what I want. I want a slot machine on the Vegas bench. And every night, if they go to overtime, they take the cover off the slot machine and they pull the handle.
Oh, boy.
And that's how they determine the three shooters for the shootout. That's all I want.
Based on their roster that they're going to have next year, that's probably not going to be worse than the average three guys they pick.
That's my dream now for the Vegas team. And I want to actually see more incorporations of gambling things into it. But I know that we got to start small because I know the NHL is real nervous or else we would have a really cool ass team named like the Craps or the Blackjacks or whatever.
Aces.
So like just that's all, a slot machine on the bench that Jack Capuano inevitably will pull to determine who shoots in the shootout.
Even better, the actual bench should be made of green felt where you can play blackjack while you're waiting to go on to your next shift. How about that?
Or maybe roulette wheel instead.
put a roulette wheel in the little middle Pierre Maguire bench reporter area, and like, and when it's like him and like when it's like him and the someone from like Sportsnet, they can just like play against each other. Whoever wins the most money wins the most money.
Put a roulette wheel in the middle of the ice.
Oh, speaking of gimmicks, you know what the Minnesota Wild should do since they're playing Prince when they score goals and they keep playing fucking Let's Go Crazy, which is a cliche song. It's fucking boring.
Uh-huh.
I'm a pro Raspberry Beret guy.
Me too. My arguably my favorite Prince song.
It's peppy. It's fun. Mm-hmm. But they're never going to use it because there's a she pronoun in the sing-along part of it and men are playing sports and you can't have that.
Right.
Yeah, I get it. But Raspberry Beret is a hat. And if someone on the Minnesota Wild gets a hat trick, they score their third goal. You can't always tell sometimes with deflections and shit, but you say Eric Staal scores a third goal in the third period of a game into an empty net. You play Raspberry Beret while hats are raining down. That's a great little image. That's
and,
fun.
And everybody in the arena gets a free raspberry sorbet.
Yeah. God. Why are we wasting our time here on this podcast when we have all these ideas for sex novels, marketing for teams?
Dan Strandedge wants to know, best non-main Seinfeld character that isn't David Putty?
So is Newman a main character?
Yeah, he's got to be part of the main. The main is Elaine, Jerry, Kramer, George, Newman. And then, like, is he, if he says David Putty, that means I would imagine that, like, Jackie Childs would be eligible.
Tim Watley
would be eligible.
I like Bookman.
Bookman is a great answer.
I love him. When that Bookman episode comes on, like, I just, that's it. Hold on. I got to watch a scene where he's in his apartment and he's belittling him. We listen to me, funny guy. I like Bookman
it's,
a lot.
You know, it's such a cliche answer, but I mean, like, Jay Peterman's probably my choice.
Eh. Banya makes me laugh.
Oh, he makes me squirm.
That's why he's great.
Yeah. All right, I'll go with Jay Peterman. This is from Eric. Why does Dave only respond to those with a 5,000 follower count or higher on Twitter?
That's not true.
Is that a rule? I didn't even know that was a rule.
Is that a thing this guy made up because I don't reply to him?
Apparently.
Hold on. Let me go to this guy's Twitter account. What was it?
It was soap poisoning. It was...
Where are you going?
I don't know where the hell it is. No. It's Eric_BOYY wants to know that.
Eric_B. You know what, though? On my Twitter account, I have, like, that filter that filters out, like, you know, garbage tweets, whatever the filter does. And, like, it filters out people I follow sometimes. So sometimes I don't even see replies to me. Like, somebody, it'll be like someone in my, like, I was going back and forth with Brian C. Grubb, and he replied to me, and I saw it in my regular timeline, and I went over my notifications, and it didn't show up there. So sometimes I don't even see the replies. People are.
Tyson Thorpe wants to know, have you guys ever seen a giant cluster like the Eastern Conference this year? Are teams going to sell or not? Well, teams are going to see that the great equalizer this year, as far as the trade deadline, is the expansion draft. Where I think even though it is a situation where literally everybody in the East is still alive.
Devils aren't alive.
The Devils are 5 points out of the wild card. That's, they're very much alive.
That's like 9 points in real stats.
And they are a -28 goal differential.
And they didn't look great against the fucking Avs, by the way. Like, the Avs are a train wreck team. Oh, they're bad. But they're not going to make
it. No, I think the great equalizer is the expansion draft, and I think that's why ultimately, like, you know, we're going to see a lot of action at the deadline is because the expansion draft, even if all these teams are, like, not in selling mode. And the thing is like, these guys all know what the deal is. Like, even though the standings will tell you, like, the Sabres are 5 points out, like, they'll totally deal Kulikov if they get a deal or something like that. They're not going to sit on their hands because they might have a chance to make the playoffs.
Yeah, it's going to be a bunch of C-level. It's basically going to be like all the celebrities that went to the RNC. Like, that's going to be the version of the trade deadline.
Yeah.
Wow, Dmitry Kulikov.
Whoa, Scott Baio goes to the... Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of the Avs, John Mitchell is going to be a good pickup for somebody. That guy can play still. I like him as like a little cheeky depth forward that can do a little bit on offense.
Ryan Coley wants to know, who's the best Bond?
Pierce Brosnan. Next question.
Here's where I'll agree with you. Because the answer is Connery, but here's where I will agree with you. I think Pierce Brosnan doesn't get enough credit for his versatility, and I'll tell you what I mean. Like, he was different in GoldenEye than he was in, like, Tomorrow Never Dies, then he was in The World Is Not Enough, then he was in Die Another Day. In the beginning of Die Another Day, he's kind of a badass. Like, when he shows up at the hotel, like, stripped of all his shit, and he... Like, he's kind of, like...
He kills that guy.
You know, fucking samurai in the beginning of that movie. And then it goes off the rails where it's, like, fencing with Madonna and shit. And being chased by a giant laser on a fucking ice car.
Pierce Brosnan was hamstringed by bad scripts where he had a bunch of, like, hokey,
yeah,
like, corny puns he had to do, like, every fourth line.
Where I will agree with you is that if you're making the argument that the best Bond is whatever Bond could play the role in any variety of different movies... Like, if you put Pierce Brosnan in Goldfinger, he would have been great.
Right.
I think there's something to what you've said.
You've talked yourself into me. I like that. That's great.
But no, but the best is still Connery because he's established the entire mythos. I mean, it's like
Pierce Brosnan.
Everyone else is doing a cover album.
Pierce Brosnan established the video game GoldenEye. Therefore, he's the best Bond.
Okay.
Next question.
That makes a very good point.
Sean Connery wasn't walking around in a four-player shoot-em-up game.
Two more.
Money Penny.
This is from our good friend Marissa Brotherton wants to know, would Ruby have married you at the Vegas Taco Bell Cantina?
Oh, yeah. That was a thing. You can get married at the Taco Bell, right? Did you refresh your vows while you had a naked chalupa with each other?
This is from Ruby today in tweeting me that very story about getting married at Taco Bell. Shame this wasn't around a year ago. I could have convinced you to elope. So to answer your question, yes, Ruby would have married me at the Vegas Taco Bell Cantina.
And Sean Leahy would have rolled in there as we were all finishing up our meals. Hey.
I don't think we ever discussed the fact that Sean Leahy was a little late to the wedding.
He fucking watched it through the window. He watched the ceremony through the window because he was late on the train.
Thomas Cook wants to know, what's the most obscure or over-the-top thing you've seen a mascot do live at a game? Well, that's obvious. It was when the Devil's mascot, who was a guy dressed as a giant puck, would reach over women's shoulders and grab their breasts, thus resulting in a lawsuit that made the Devils actually change their mascot.
I don't even remember the puck guy.
Oh, Puck Man, yeah. Look it up. It's true.
I don't really have a good answer.
I also love the popcorn bit that Bailey does at the LA Kings games where they have the plant in the audience from, like, who's a fan of the other team, and, like, he dumps an entire, like, concession-sized bag of popcorn on them. Big fan of that.
I know what it is. The Blue Jackets have that bug, right? They have, like, a bug that's their logo that walks around, or their mascot with, like, the big green or red eyes.
Yeah.
Like, he does a thing in between periods where he actually eats shit off the floor because... bugs eat shit. I thought that was a pretty clever, you know, making it real for the fans. That's totally true. Go look it up. You think I'm making a joke here about a fly eating crap? That's a real thing. That Buzzy, I believe, is his name. Buzzy the Blue Jacket eats crap between periods.
It was amazing when they had Boomer the Cannon because they would have this one mascot eating shit off the ground and then the other one just like a giant boner. It was the biggest Blue Jacket. I was a member of the fifth line then. I was a huge Blue Jackets fan.
Just a big old dick walking around the arena.
KCJ wants some advice. What's the etiquette of a hat trick if you're sitting behind the net where you cannot reach the ice from your seats? So Casey wants to know, if you're behind the net, then you have the mosquito netting there. Obviously, right. If you threw your hat on the ice, it would bounce back.
Can't get it over there either. It's too high.
It's a pretty easy one in my eyes.
What is it?
Well, if I'm sitting behind the net, I'm going to throw my hat to my right or to my left, and then my hope is that the person that it hits is either clear of the netting, mm-hmm, or they will then throw it.
Pass it down.
That's,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
And that's because I'm Catholic, or at least used to be, and I know about passing the hat around at church and assume that everyone will be on the same page because we are, of course, a Christian nation.
Jesus Christ. That answer really meandered into some dark territory there all of a sudden.
Oh, that's not true. Ritual sacrifice.
And Christmas is under attack.
Yeah, let's put the mask back in Christmas. Jared wants to know.
I thought of a good Christmas protest joke the other day. I don't want to share it because I might use it in something else. But one day I'll share it on here. I just want, like, the war on Christmas, all those people that get mad about that.
Yeah.
I'll tell you soon when we're done here. It's good.
Can I tell you, I'm not going to tell you within what context I would want to do this, but I often have thought about putting in my car a giant sign that simply says, either this guy's wrong with an arrow pointing, or fuck this guy with an arrow pointing. And if I see a protest, just getting out of the car and standing next to them. And then they're going to be like so mad, but at the same time, what are they going to do? I'm just going to stand there in silence. I don't have to talk to them. It's always been one of my dreams. But like, I would have to be unemployed for a long time, or mentally deranged, I think would be the other thing too.
So you're saying like within the next year you can see yourself?
Yeah, just unemployed for a long time.
Yeah, sure.
Long time. Finally, by the way, no appeal for Vermette. Oh, I love when news is always breaking during the show. How many of Dave? This is from Chris Sergison. How many of Lozo's writer friends used him as the template for the cynical, snarky buddy in a spec script or novel? Yeah. Yeah. Many writer buddies are like, oh no, that's not you. That's his name is Gabe.
I don't know. This guy would probably have to ask his mom because.
Oh my god!
I don't know if we're friends at this point.
Oh my god!
Maybe we're more than friends.
Jared wants to know, how much do you hate hockey tribalism forcing fans to disclose fandom to justify takes? Hey, Ducks fan here. So, what he's saying basically is, how much do you hate the idea that you have to state your loyalties in order to have a take?
Do you have to do that? Is that what fans have to do? I do. That does drive me nuts. It drives me nuts when. I remember searching for this on Twitter because I kept seeing these tweets. It was when Adrian Peterson beat the crap out of his fucking kid with a stick.
Yeah.
Like a big old piece of fucking tree branch that he grabbed.
Right.
And there were people who were tweeting things like, hey, I'm a Vikings fan, but that's wrong.
Right. Yeah.
They do that all the time with stuff like that. Where
I think that might be what he's talking about.
Right. Like, I'm a Patriots fan, but I'm not in favor of Aaron Hernandez murdering somebody.
Right.
You don't have to establish that before you have that kind of opinion. You can just have that opinion as a human being.
Yeah.
You're in your free time. You're a fan of the Look, I'm a Cowboys fan, but if Ezekiel Elliott beat the crap out of a woman, that's bad. Like, no. It's bad no matter who you're a fan of. You don't have to establish some sort of qualifier before opinions. So,
yeah. I prefer people take ownership of how morally superior their team is.
Yeah, they do that all the time.
Like, I would much prefer if people were like, listen, as a Buffalo Sabres fan, I know that Evander Kane's a piece of shit because we are God's chosen team.
We are the best team.
We're the best team.
So we can identify that better than you.
Right, exactly.
As a Blackhawks fan and Patrick Kane. Like, that annoys the crap out of me.
What, you think you're better than me? Yeah. Why? I'm a Buffalo Sabres fan. We're God's chosen team. I mean, what are you? Are you even, do you even hockey, bro?
They do that. They do that with good stuff, too, where like, who recently did they announce was going to have their number retired soon?
Lettinen?
Dallas, yeah. Yari Lettinen.
Yeah, Yari Lettinen.
Retiring Yari Lettinen's number, and like some Canadians fan would be like, as a Habs fan, I can really appreciate you guys retiring.
Yes!
Like, fuck off.
Oh, that's true. That's true. That happens
lost,
a lot.
Man. Get out of here.
You know, as a Devils fan, I can really sympathize with how boring and repetitive this movie is.
As a human being, I can really sympathize with how unbelievably terrible your take is when you put your favorite team before your take.
As a Los Angeles Kings fan, I literally just got here and don't know what's going on, but I assume that
I know
the playoffs are on.
As a two-year-old that just became aware of how cognitive functions work, I appreciate how Blackhawks fans only showed up to the team 6 years ago. Like, yeah.
As a Vancouver Canucks fan, I can really relate to the fact that I've hung around way too long here, past my welcome. So I'll just stay for a little bit longer if you don't mind.
You know, as a Rangers fan, I can really appreciate how Supernatural is in its 12th season and isn't really that good, even though it's been around for a really long time and seems to have some fans.
You know, as a Detroit Red Wings fan, I appreciate the fact you acknowledge that I've come here every day for the last 7 years to buy the paper and a bagel. But I'm not going to come here anymore now. The streak is broken.
As a Coyotes fan, I can really appreciate what it's like to go to a movie in the eighth week of its release and be the only person in there watching it. So I get that. I really get where this John Wick 2 theater in mid-May is coming from.
Good times.
Oh, yeah.
Indeed.
All right. Sports fans.
That's the show for this week. Thanks to Jonah Carey for joining us in an emergency situation to talk about this breaking Montreal Canadiens news. Anytime we have breaking news about Montreal, I can guarantee you that there would be a poorly conceived interview with Jonah Carey involving a speakerphone and a microphone. I'm Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports. You can find me on Twitter at Wyshynski, W-Y-S-H-Y-N-S-K-I. You can read my book, Take Your Eye Off the Puck, which is available wherever books are sold. You can read our book, along with Down Goes Brown, which is called The 100 Greatest Players.
It's called something with 100 in it.
100 Greatest Players and other stuff. You can find it. It's an ebook wherever ebooks are sold. Also, if you hear this early on Thursday, we do have an AMA on Reddit, me and Lozo and Down Goes Brown.
Oh, yeah. I tried signing up for I don't have a Reddit account, so I'm like, sign up Dave Lozo, taken.
I think Lozo, taken. Really?
Lozo 69. Everything's fucking taken, but I'm going to do that tonight so I can do it tomorrow in the morning.
All right. Well, hopefully, I think we're doing one. I'll double check with that dude. Anyways.
Somebody replied to me on Twitter about it, so I'm assuming people know at this point.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting the podcast. If you want to support the podcast further, leave a review on iTunes. That's always a good thing. And tell a friend about the podcast. We appreciate all the support, including your very sweet understanding that the more successful this podcast gets, mayhaps our parent company would want to put advertising on it. So
yeah.
Lozo and I want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts for listening to the show and would ask you to not only frequent the advertisers that we have on this podcast, but also not be insufferable pricks about the fact that we have a couple ads on the show now.
Like, what did that guy expect us to reply back? That's the thing. People, you only reply to people with 5,000 followers or more. Pretty sure that guy had like 6. I engaged with him when he said, "Oh, I got to go all the way to minute 437 to get past ads."
Oh, poor you!
Oh my god!
Oh, and by the way, also finally, thank you to the producers or set designers or whatever of Dear Evan Hansen, the hit Broadway musical. As apparently there is a tweet promoting Puck Soup that is featured in the pre-show, according to James McBee. We're all trying to figure out what that means.
Still not really entirely positive.
The way I see it,
like tweet pre-show Broadway play.
We're on Broadway.
I have no context of
the way I see it is that we are both officially on Broadway. We are now Tony eligible.
Oh,
we are ready to win the EGOT.
So yeah, so we've got the Tony.
We won. That's right. Not only are we on Broadway, we just won the Tony for best tweet featured before a show.
Right.
And now we're on our way.
So how do we get this? So we have to get the podcast mentioned in a movie.
Oh, that's easy. I mean, like, I'm going to win an Oscar for my performance as insufferable blogger in the John Scott story.
Yeah. By the way, I like how that guy thinks I have friends who sit around and write spec scripts all day.
he thinks you're in Hollywood, apparently. I know. Like, it's exciting.
My best friends work in marketing. Sell piss is what I like to say my one friend does. He works for a background check place, so we just say he sells piss. That's his job. My other friend's a stay-at-home dad. I have and hockey writers. Like, there's no, I don't know anybody famous. Oh, Goon 3 we're going to get into. That's going to be our, when Jay makes Goon 3, he's going to reference our podcast.
He will, definitely.
Unless he did it in 2 and Goon didn't tell us.
Goon 3. All right, that's me, and here's Lozo to take you home.
Yeah, I got nothing. See ya. Thanks for listening.
Perfect. I mean, that's really, in a nutshell, everything you'd ever want. Did I get everything on my list here?
I'm in a nutshell.
This says plastic, plaster skit. No, I don't know. All right. We love you guys. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.